Today is Thursday, January 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up,
Secret Service is responsible for security, working in conjunction with our law enforcement and military partners.
Security is tight as Washington, D.C. prepares to swear in a new president. They're also preparing for a large protest the day after Donald Trump's inauguration. A former U.S. president and his wife are hospitalized.
We want to send our prayers and our love to them.
Also ahead, a new movie out in theaters takes on multiple personality disorder. It's all on today's International Edition. Washington is a city in transition this week as President Barack Obama prepares to give way to his successor, President-elect Donald Trump. Excited Trump supporters are flocking to Washington to celebrate the inauguration of the 45th president. But anti-Trump protesters are also expected to be out in force for Friday's inauguration, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
It is the end of an era. After 8 years in the White House, the country's first black president, Barack Obama, prepares to depart the stage. Obama struck an optimistic tone in his farewell address.
For those of us fortunate enough to have been part of this work, and to see it up close, let me tell you, it can energize and inspire. And more often than not, your faith in America and in Americans will be confirmed.
In Washington, the ritual of preparing for Donald Trump's inauguration is well underway, complete with parade marchers and stand-ins rehearsing the oath of office. At his news conference last week, Trump promised his inauguration would be memorable.
The 20th is going to be something that will be very, very special, very beautiful. And I think we're going to have massive crowds because we have a movement. It's a movement like the world has never seen before.
Trump's inauguration has already sparked protests among those opposed to his plans to tighten immigration and to do away with Obama's health care law. And more than 30 congressional Democrats say they will stay away. As he prepares to take office, Trump faces an enormous challenge in trying to unify the country, says analyst Michael Barone.
I think Donald Trump faces probably a greater challenge, to the extent he wants to do that, than the last three presidents, each of whom faced a significant challenge in that regard.
Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Mr. President-elect, since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
Your organization.
You are attacking our news organization.
Your organization.
Can you give us a chance
to
ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir,
Trump has already signaled an aggressive approach to dealing with the media, and he continues to engage in feuds via Twitter. Get used to it, says Tom DeFrank.
Here's his operating style. He loves being in the center of the maelstrom. He loves chaos because he knows at the end he's going to make the decision and that's it.
Trump already presents a sharp contrast with Barack Obama, says expert John Fortier.
There's the change that Donald Trump brings about with his style. I mean, Donald Trump is very different than any other president in terms of his communications, in terms of his being unafraid to wade into controversy. It will certainly not be a dull time.
If they do a bad job, I'll say, you're fired. Goodbye,
as the everybody. Obama Goodbye. Era draws to a close, the Trump era, with all its expectations and uncertainty, is about to begin. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
While crowds will descend on Washington for Friday's inauguration, a large protest, as you've heard, is expected on Saturday. Organizers say the Million Woman March is expected to draw people looking to voice concerns about a variety of issues. Joining me now, Monica Weeks, president of the Washington chapter of the National Organization for Women, one of the groups participating. Thank you for being with us, Monica. Why has your organization decided to be part of this?
We want to collect information. We really want to capture the energy and the new people who've maybe not been active before, who want to learn what they can do in their community and nationally to hold the new administration accountable. So we are going to collect names, phone numbers, you know, emails for this. We're calling the Feminist Alert System. And so the idea is that we will collect this information to keep people abreast of what's going on. We also want to send a message that we don't want to normalize a lot of the rhetoric from this administration and Trump's, you know, things that he said specifically about women. We want to make the message clear that we're not okay with it and that we are going to continuously expect more from him and his administration and pretty much keep him in check. So I know the march organizers have said that this is not a march that's specifically anti-Trump, but a lot of the things that he has said and done are very anti-woman. And so from at least our perspective, we want to make it known that we're not okay with a lot of that.
Can you give me some examples of some of the things that you're concerned about, some of the specific issues when you say anti-woman, what they are?
They've already taken the first step in the Senate to repeal the ACA, which would not make birth control available to everybody as it is right now. We kick off a lot of people off health insurance, drive health insurance costs very high. They want to defund Planned Parenthood. They basically want to roll us back more than 50 years or so. The policies are scary, but also the way that they talk about women, we can't let that become normalized either. It's not okay. And we need to send that message for sure. We can't let this become the new norm in the U.S.
Will your organization also have people at the actual event speaking or marching?
Yes, we will be marching. We have a big group. We've got dozens of buses coming out from all over the country to march with us. We're going to be collecting information, like I said, distributing signs. We have like 45,000 signs. And we're even had a woman donate hats that says, "Make America Gracious Again." so we're going to be distributing those and the signs. And definitely when the march starts, we'll be marching.
And lastly, do you have any idea at this point how many people are expected to attend this event?
They're estimating 100,000 to 200,000 people. I have read that at RFK, there's the stadium there. That's where they have a lot of the buses come in. There's like a bus depot there. And we have over 2,000 buses registered at RFK, only 200 for the inauguration, which I find funny. That's only RFK. There are other bus depots in D.C. and a little outside of D.C. Those numbers I don't have, and I don't know if they've been captured, to be honest.
There are a lot of different organizations representing a lot of different issues.
Oh, my gosh, so many organizations coming in. Yeah, and it's not just being called the Women's. It's the Women's March, and it's definitely to send a message, but there are a lot of racial justice groups marching, economic justice groups, labor marching, so excited to see the turnout.
That's Monica Weeks, president of the Washington chapter of the National Organization for Women. Organizers say there are also 200 planned, quote, sister marches around the country. Well, it is almost time for the biggest event in American politics, and the parade route is set as Washington hosts the 58th presidential inauguration. Securing the streets on Inauguration Day, however, is a huge task that's been months in the making. Arash Arabasadi reports from Washington.
On Friday, the U.S. Capitol becomes the biggest stage in the theater of American politics.
Ladies and gentlemen, the president-elect of the United States, Donald John Trump.
This past weekend, members of the military took part in a dress rehearsal for the big day. But behind the scenes for the past several months, there was a much larger collaboration to secure one of the hallmarks of American democracy, the peaceful transition of power. That starts with protecting the outgoing president and president-elect.
The Secret Service is responsible for security for this event, working in conjunction with our law enforcement and military partners.
Some early estimates predict as many as 900,000 people will attend.
It's a big event. There's a lot of resources. There's a lot of people. We have the right people. We have enough people. We have the other resources, and we have a good plan.
That plan includes securing Washington on Inauguration Day with a joint task force of nearly 5,000 service members, many from out of town.
It can be challenging, but everyone is on the same page. Everybody wants this to be a success, so I would want to make sure that they are transported there on time, that they are fed, that they had every single thing that they requested in order for them to execute their mission.
The task force secures parts of the presidential parade route, but Homeland Security protects the people, sometimes from each other, especially as anti-Trump protests are expected.
We make sure that everybody can come here, say what they need to say, have the experience they want to have in Washington, D.C., do so peacefully, lawfully, and everybody goes home at the end of the day safely.
The inauguration, of course, has a Twitter page. And Washington's local government has a one-stop shop of road closures and other info. Much of Washington already feels the pinch of the inauguration lockdown. For Arash Arabisadi, Amy Katz, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the top stories at voanews.com. 2016 makes history as the hottest year ever recorded. The U.S. system of checks and balances reigns in presidential powers. A U.S. Senate panel overwhelmingly approves Trump's Pentagon pick. And after Obama, foreign aid programs face uncertainty. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. At his final news conference as U.S. president on Wednesday, Barack Obama sought to reassure those Americans anxious about the change of administrations after 8 years with him in charge. He told reporters he's really optimistic.
I believe tragic things happen. I think there's evil in the world. But I think that at the end of the day, if we work hard, and if we're true to those things in us that feel true and feel right, that the world gets a little better each time.
Well, his final question on what he had said to his two teenage daughters about the election results after Hillary Clinton lost to Trump, Obama said Malia and Sasha were disappointed, but that he's proud of them because they are resilient, patriotic, and not cynical. Former U.S. President George H.W. Bush has been moved to an intensive care unit at a Houston, Texas hospital and is resting comfortably following a procedure to clear his airway, according to family spokesman Jim McGrath. McGrath said Bush's wife, former First Lady Barbara Bush, was also admitted to the same hospital Wednesday as a precaution after experiencing fatigue and coughing. At his final news conference Wednesday, President Obama said the White House has been in touch with the Bush family.
They have not only dedicated their lives to this country, they have been a constant source of friendship and support and good counsel for Michelle and me over the years. They are as fine a couple as we know. And so we want to send our prayers and our love to them. Really good people.
President-elect Donald Trump sent out a tweet wishing the 92-year-old former president a speedy recovery. Turning now to what's been trending on social media with G. Abby Lee. G, a lot of people talking about the former president and his wife being hospitalized.
Hi, Lori. Americans are expressing concerns and well wishes for the former president across different social media platforms. Many are also wondering whether his son, George W. Bush, will be able to attend the inauguration on Friday. This is what Matt Thomas with CBS Radio tweeted. Hashtag breaking. I am told for now George W. Bush is still planning to attend Donald Trump's inauguration Friday. George H.W. Bush and wife in hospital. Vice President-elect Mike Pence also tweeted he's keeping the senior Bush in his thoughts and prayers.
Yes, we are certainly keeping them in our thoughts and prayers for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of presidents, as we mentioned, President Obama gave his last and final press conference.
That's right. Twitter users are sharing highlights from the news conference, one of them being a joke about fashion. He said he was sorely tempted to wear a tan suit today, but First Lady Michelle Obama dissuaded him. It's a bit early.
Wait, is it because you can't wear tan in January, or is it a fashion thing with Michelle?
I think it's a fashion thing with Michelle, being that tan suit is just too early for January.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It's complicated.
It's like don't wear white after August here in the U.S. So what else is trending?
Also about fashion, actually. So French fashion house Balenciaga is paying tribute to American politician Bernie Sanders. For the fall-winter collection of Balenciaga menswear, it included pieces inspired by Sanders' campaign logo. Some people are saying that's perfect for when you want to show that you're stylish and cool, but also expound that Bernie would have won. But others are saying it's so ironic that a designed menswear line is inspired by the champion of American middle class.
Indeed, for sure. I don't think Bernie Sanders was ever known for his fashion.
Not really. Or his hair.
Right. Anything else trending?
Yep. People are sharing photos and their thoughts on vampire bats. So Brazilian scientists are saying these bats are flying in through windows and feeding on humans. Creepy. Lori?
All right, G. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks so much. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz, past and present, and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, during his final news conference Wednesday, President Obama was also asked about his shocking commutation Tuesday of the 35-year-old prison sentence, or the 35-year prison sentence, of Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning, who leaked hundreds of thousands of documents to the website WikiLeaks. She is among 209 prison commutations and 64 pardons from Obama. Most of the others were serving sentences for nonviolent drug offenses, but the Manning decision has drawn criticism from Republicans and Democrats alike. But Obama said he believes justice was served.
The sentence that she received was very disproportionate relative to what other leakers had received, and that she had served a significant amount of time, that it made sense to commute and not pardon her sentence.
Manning, a transgender woman who was Bradley Manning when he committed the crime, will have served 7 years behind bar before being released in May. Government prosecutors had argued that Manning's actions could have endangered the lives of U.S. servicemen and women. Joining me now is playwright and prison activist Sarah Shord, one of three American hikers who were captured and held hostage by the Iranian government. Thank you so much for your time. What's your view of the president's commutation of Manning?
She has been in horrifying conditions for over 7 years, from extreme solitary confinement to being in a military prison, in the, you know, a male military prison. As a trans woman, she hasn't been given the basic necessities. Her mental health has been very distressing for everyone who cares about her on the outside, and she's attempted suicide several times. So President Obama is finally taking the stand and leading authors on the right side of history when it comes to not just the case of Chelsea Manning and her rights. She stood up for our democracy. She gave us information that we needed about what our military was doing in Iraq and Afghanistan. And she's been tortured psychologically. And also Obama is taking a stand, I think, on the whole issue of whistleblowers and the importance they play in our democracy.
It's interesting because a lot of people would argue that complete opposite. You know, this person was a traitor and their sexual orientation should not be the responsibility of the prison system or the U.S. military. What would you say to those people?
I would say that those people are not familiar with our history, which is that there are definitely circumstances where we have a moral obligation to put ourselves at risk and to even break the law for the greater good. And this is clearly one of those situations. Some of the videos that were released in the trove of information that Chelsea was a part of getting out to the public are of horrendous war crimes that our government was committing in our name without us having any access or knowledge that these acts and atrocities were being committed. A democracy depends on information.
How would all of that and that viewpoint compare to what has happened with WikiLeaks in regard to our election?
I mean, I believe very strongly that this information, that journalists and publications have the responsibility to vet this information before it comes out to the public. I do see that as being, well, I mean, it was important that the information came out that the election was compromised. And so I mean, these are connected, but I don't think that Chelsea's case is the same as, for example, you know, Snowden's case.
Have you had a chance to talk to anyone that knows Chelsea Manning to find out how she's reacting to the news?
No, I haven't. I've been trying, and I'm going to keep trying to do that. Chelsea really has been a very important voice against the use of solitary confinement, which has been my main focus for the last 6 years since I got out of prison, since I was held hostage by the Iranian government. She was held in similar conditions to my own, and when I got out of prison and spoke out against those conditions and said that I was subjected to psychological torture by the Iranian government, her lawyers used that as an example in court. And some of the articles that I wrote about that, saying that we had no business doing that to our own citizens, what we're saying Iran shouldn't be doing to our citizens.
You've been an activist for prison reform ever since you yourself got caught up in a horrific situation of your own. What do you say to what President Obama has done as far as the commutations and the number of people that he has pardoned, et cetera?
Tears of joy for the low-level drug offenders that never, in my opinion, should have been in prison in the first place, that need help. It's a medical, you know, drug abuse is a medical problem. It's wonderful that they're getting out, and it's also a very difficult time for those of us working on prison reform because we have no idea what kind of leverage we're going to have in the future under this new administration. So, of course, I wish that Obama could have done a lot more and started this a lot sooner, but that doesn't take away from the beauty of what's happening right now. It doesn't take away from, you know, the knowledge that more people that deserve to be free are now free.
All right. We appreciate your perspective and your time. Thanks so much. Playwright, prison activist Sarah Shord, and one of three Americans captured and held by the Iranian government. A new film from Oscar-nominated director M. Night Shyamalan, there you go, say that three times, features a remarkable performance by Scottish actor James McAvoy. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, McAvoy takes audiences and his victims on a terrifying ride in the thriller Split.
What are we doing here? What the hell is going on?
I was sent to get you for a reason.
Open the door!
James McAvoy brings 9 different characters and 23 personalities to the screen in one body in Split. McAvoy plays a man named Kevin with multiple personality disorder who kidnaps 3 teenaged girls and torments them. One of his characters has obsessive-compulsive disorder. One is a 9-year-old boy. One is a woman. McAvoy says keeping the characters separated from scene to scene was his biggest challenge.
I was really clear about what they were all like separately, and I had to be, otherwise they'd kind of bleed into each other and it'd be a slightly confusing and muddy experience for the audience, whereas it had to be quite clearly defined.
James McAvoy said his most difficult moment in filming was where he had to change rapidly from one character to another. Director M. Night Shyamalan, known for The Sixth Sense, Signs, Unbreakable, and The Last Airbender, says McAvoy even had the cast and crew applauding during shooting.
We would shoot and people would just applaud on the set. He was that good. Like, we'd stop working and just applaud and be like, thank you for what you just did. And he would just bow as he should, you know, because it was, we knew we were seeing something special. I would look through the lens and see him performing, and I would look around and be like, God, I can't believe we just got that. That was so amazing.
And I guess this because you've adjusted the chocolate dish twice since you came in here, and I understand you have OCD.
I see. Now I see. That's clever. That's clever. But I'm not Dennis.
And you and Patricia have been banned from the light for quite a while now, primarily, shall we say, because of your beliefs.
Patricia and Dennis are very unstable. I'm not Dennis.
Veteran actress Betty Buckley plays Kevin's therapist. Buckley says she has always been fascinated by multiple personality disorder.
So I've always been pretty fascinated by human beings' capacity to make creative adjustments to painful and experiences of suffering and torture. And that's really interesting to me. Human psychology, why we are the way we are, why we do what we do.
Director M. Night Shyamalan says he enjoys exploring some of the darker elements of our world.
Point out something that's extraordinary to me and then ask a question about that. This is what this disorder is for me. It's an absolutely fascinating disorder, very moving and very poignant. It's unbelievable what the mind and the body can do.
The film is rated PG-13. It's open in theaters worldwide. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition here on VOA. That's going to do it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
January 16th marked the first anniversary of the implementation of the Iran nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA. In a statement, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry called the deal an historic understanding that prevents Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon and demonstrated the power of sustained, principled, multilateral diplomacy to address major international challenges. The implementation of the JCPOA is highly technical and requires diligent efforts by all the participants, noted Mr. Kerry, including the P5+1 countries, the European Union, and Iran. As the International Atomic Agency continues to verify the deal through intensive access and monitoring provisions, he stated, there is no doubt that the deal is working and all participants are keeping their commitments. Under the terms of the JCPOA, Iran has shipped out 98% of its enriched uranium, dismantled 2/3 of its centrifuges, filled its plutonium reactor with concrete, and implemented the most rigorous nuclear inspection regime ever negotiated, according to Secretary Kerry. The United States and the other members of the P5+1 have also fulfilled their commitments to lift nuclear-related sanctions and will continue to do so as long as Iran continues to abide by the deal. The JCPOA, Mr. Kerry noted, resolved a major nuclear threat without firing a shot or sending a single soldier into combat. It did not, however, resolve all of the United States' serious differences with the government of Iran. We will continue to push back on Iran's support for terrorism, disregard for human rights, and destabilizing regional activities, said Secretary of State Kerry. But the United States, he added, our partners and our allies in the Middle East, and the entire international community are safer today because of the JCPOA.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
is for, what